অজ্ঞান তিমিরান্ধস্য জ্ঞানাঞ্জনা শালাকায়া চক্ষুরুন্মীলিতং যেন তস্মৈ শ্রী গুরবে নমঃ। শ্রী চৈতন্য মনোভীষ্টং স্থাপিতং যেন ভূতলে স্বয়ং রূপ কদামহম দদাতি স্বপদান্তিকম্। বন্দে অহং শ্রীগুরো শ্রীযুত পদকমলম শ্রীগুরুন বৈষ্ণবাংশ্চ শ্রীরূপং সাগ্রজাতং সহগণা রঘুনাথান্বিতং ত্বং সজীবম্। সাদ্বৈতং সাবধূতং পরিজনা সহিতং কৃষ্ণ চৈতন্য দেবম্। শ্রী রাধা কৃষ্ণ পাদান সহগণা ললিতা শ্রী বিশাখান্বিতাংশ্চ। হে কৃষ্ণ করুণা সিন্ধু দীনবন্ধু জগৎপতে গোপেশা গোপিকা কান্ত রাধা কান্ত নমস্তুতে। তপ্ত কাঞ্চন গৌরাঙ্গী রাধে বৃন্দাবনেশ্বরী বৃষভানু সুতে দেবী প্রণমামি হরি প্রিয়ে। বাঞ্ছাকল্পতরুভ্যশ্চ কৃপাসিন্ধুভ্যৈব চ পতিতানাং পাবনেভ্যো বৈষ্ণবেভ্যো নমো নমঃ। So I thank you all for coming to this program of ours this evening. The topic for today's discussion is simple living, high thinking. It's actually a kind of a topic or kind of a subject that practically every intelligent man is considering at a certain point of his life, especially when today's civilization is just leading everyone to a life which is full of complexities. Instead of simple living and high thinking, today's life has become complex living and no thinking. So it's actually very essential, especially for the sake of our own welfare. Human life actually should be based on this principle of simple living and high thinking. But unfortunately, the more we become involved in our bodily concept of life, our life becomes more and more complex. The reason is, actually, to maintain this body, it's always a big endeavor. As a matter of fact, everyone is struggling to survive. A survival actually means maintaining this body. And the reason, of course, is that this body is matter, whereas in our original identity, we all are spirit. So, as long as the spirit is in the body remains alive. And the moment the spirit leaves the body becomes dead. So, It is the spirit that is the living force or the living energy, and matter is dead. Matter is not actually living. Matter is dead. Like we can see a piece of stone or a piece of brick or a piece of wood. They're all dead matter. So the same way our body is also dead matter. But it is the spirit that makes the body alive. And as long as the spirit is in the body remains alive. And the moment the spirit leaves the body becomes dead. Now, it is a big endeavor for the spirit to keep the body alive in the material platform. And that's why it is always a struggle to remain alive. The expression is struggle for survival. Like everyone is struggling to survive, struggling to remain alive. And more we become involved in the bodily platform of life, the more we become concerned about the body, the more we become entangled in all kinds of unwanted involvements. So to clarify that point, I'll just make a few sections of discussions. And the first one is that our identity actually has three different phases. Like the first phase of our identity is physical. The second one is mental or intellectual, and the third is spiritual. Now basically everyone thinks that he is his body. So that existence, that as long as we think that our body is ourself, so that platform of existence is known as a bodily platform of life or physical existence. Now, beyond that bodily platform of life is the intellectual platform of life or mental platform. And beyond that intellectual platform is our spiritual platform. And in the Vedic branch of philosophy, it has been defined that in the material platform, we have two different kinds of bodies. One is the gross material body made of earth, water, fire, air and ether with the five gross elements. This gross body has been composed of. And beyond the gross body, we have another subtle material body. And that subtle material body is made of three subtle elements known as mind, intelligence and false ego. So these three are also material elements, but they are subtle material elements. Mind is material. Intelligence is material. And our false ego, that is our false identity, is also material. But beyond this gross and subtle material existence, we have our spiritual existence, which is our original identity, our spirit. So the spirit is the factor, as I mentioned, that keeps the body alive. And it has been defined that the more gross one is, the more complex his life is. For instance, when a person is in his bodily platform of life, a gross material concept, he is thinking that his body is his self. He is very, very entangled in the material platform. But when he transcends the bodily platform and comes to the intellectual platform or mental platform, his life becomes little more simpler. And when he comes to the spiritual platform, then his life becomes most simple. And, well, for that matter, the animals also are leading a simple life. But Apparently, although the life of an animal is simple, but actually the animal life is not very simple. Although they are living in the bare nature, but if you consider, their life is not exactly that simple. For instance, if you consider yourself living in the middle of a forest as a deer, although it seems to us, it seems very, very simple. Oh, it's so nice. A deer, it's such a beautiful creature living right in the middle of the wilderness and surviving just by eating grass and weeds. But if you consider, that life is full of complexity. Because his eating habit may be very simple, and his way of living is very simple apparently, but consider the amount of anxiety a deer always has to be in. So the animal life is apparently simple, but ultimately it is not exactly simple, because it is in the bodily concept of life. The animal always considers that his actual identity is his body. But it's only the human beings who can transcend the bodily platform and can come to the intellectual platform. For instance, the animals may be apparently leading a simple life, but they do not have the ability to think high. They do not have the faculty for high thinking. So that life is exactly not the life that we are aspiring for, or a human being should aspire for. The human being should aspire for a life that is based on simple living, but high thinking. A tree may be living a simple life, but the tree doesn't have high thinking. But unless and until the human being is elevated to the platform of high thinking, he cannot be satisfied, provided if he is intelligent. So that's why one must aspire for transcending the gross bodily platform and at least come to the intellectual platform. And how does one come into that platform? That has been described in the Vedic philosophy or Vedic branch of wisdom through different philosophical approaches. Like, it has been defined in the Vedic platform, Vedic wisdom, that as long as a person is situated in the gross bodily platform, then he is situated in the action-reaction platform. The material platform means action and reaction platform. But when one comes to the, especially when one is in the gross bodily platform, then he is simply concerned about his body's need, and he doesn't have any higher aspiration. Like a person who is just into his bodily platform, he is simply concerned about his body's need, which means eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. These are the needs of the body. The body needs food to eat. This gross body needs food for eating. The gross body becomes tired and it needs the sleep. And the gross body has the basic desire for mating, and the gross body needs the defense or protecting it from external calamities. And more we get involved in this gross bodily platform, our life becomes more and more complex. That we can see, although basic needs of the body is just eating, sleeping, mating and defending, but we have made such a complex arrangement for that. We are not simply satisfied just by eating. We want all kinds of elaborate eating arrangements. Like, for instance, when you go to the marketplace nowadays, you see that the food is not just locally grown food. The foods have been brought from all different parts of the world, and then also there is so many other complex arrangements. And so this way, the more involved we become into the bodily platform, we actually make unnecessary arrangements, which makes our life more and more complex. But when we transcend the bodily platform and come to the intellectual platform, then our life naturally becomes simpler. Like, for instance, you can see that a person who is very much into the bodily platform, he is always concerned how he is going to make his make himself look beautiful. Then he tries to make himself distinguished from others by wearing the most exclusive clothes or garments, driving the most exclusive cars, and so on and so forth. So this way the life becomes more and more complex. Actually, we don't need those things. Life could have been very simple without cars, without color TV, even without so many unnecessary arrangements like elaborate drinking arrangements and nightclubs and so on and so forth. But these are because of the these things have been arranged because people have become so much into the bodily platform. But when one transcends the gross bodily platform and comes to the intellectual platform, then he becomes, his needs become lesser. Like a person who is in the intellectual platform, like say persons like the philosophers, thinkers, poets, they do not really need, they are not so much involved into the gross bodily needs, like a layman. You consider a layman on the street or just a person who is very, very mediocre, who is very much into his bodily platform, meaning he is simply concerned that his body is his self. His need is much more than the need, or rather material needs are much more than a philosopher or a poet or a thinker. Because then he's a philosopher, a scientist, or a thinker, he is not so much into his gross bodily platform. He has actually transcended the bodily platform and have come to the intellectual platform. And in the intellectual platform, he doesn't need the his need is not for the gross body, but his need is for the mind. And mind's food is actually thought. The food for intellect is thought. So when he has enough thought or enough material to think, he is satisfied. So that's why he does not really make so much of an endeavor to satisfy himself by all these external arrangements. Like a person who is situated in an intellectual platform, he is not so much into good food or nice house and so on and so forth. Like, I mean, if you look at the early philosophers, you can very easily notice that. Like the early Greek philosophers like Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, you can see that they all were aspiring or at least propagating for a simpler life. Whereas due to the modern technical development or industrial development, the man has become more and more involved into his gross bodily platform and the life is becoming more and more complex. But when one transcends the intellectual platform and then he comes to the spiritual platform. Spiritual platform means recognizing oneself as the spirit and understanding that he is a spiritual element, and when he becomes situated on that spiritual platform, then his body's needs become practically minimized to nothing. It is, of course, as long as one has the body, he has to maintain the body. But when one is situated on the spiritual platform, he doesn't really care for the body. Like, that's why we notice that when somebody is situated on the spiritual platform, even though he is persecuted by the society around him, but he does not really succumb to those persecutions. Like, one wonderful example will be of Jesus Christ. Like he allowed himself to be crucified, and automatically the question arises. Actually, I used to think before that it used to be a kind of a surprising to me that Jesus, who healed the lepers, raised the dead, why he couldn't just disappear, hypnotize those people, those who came to captivate him, capture him, and just go away, run away. He could have easily done that, because especially when you are brought up in India, you can see that this kind of hypnotism is very, very simple affair. Even the street people can do this kind of tricks of hypnotizing people. And obviously Jesus could have very easily have hypnotized the people who came to capture him. But why he didn't do it? And of course I could get the answer that he was actually not aware, not at all concerned about his crucifixion. He allowed himself to be crucified because he came to fulfill certain mission, and by allowing himself to be crucified, he executed that mission. That is, he showed the people around him how much he was concerned about them, and by allowing himself to be crucified, he tried to arouse their compassion and sympathy for him. And he could allow himself to do that, like allowed himself to be crucified, because he was not in the bodily platform. They crucified his body, but Jesus was not in his bodily platform. The pain that was inflicted upon his body could not really touch his spiritual consciousness. And we can see that this point is verified, like when he resurrected, we could see that actually he just voluntarily allowed himself to be crucified, and then he raised from the so-called dead, but actually he was, this crucifixion could not affect him by any chance whatsoever. Another example is Socrates. When he was asked to drink hemlock, the arrangements were made that Socrates could run away. His friends, he had quite a few patrons, and they made arrangements for Socrates to run away. But Socrates completely refused that proposal. And it was obvious from his dialogues at that time that he was not at all concerned that he is going to leave his body. Now, when can a person become so bold and so unconcerned about his physical existence? Only when one has realized his actual identity as the spirit. And actually our real identity is spiritual. Unfortunately, we do not think about it. That's why we are completely in ignorance about our spiritual identity. But if we think about it rather deeply, then we can see that it is the spirit that is our real identity, not this body. This body is just the covering for the spirit. Now the question may arise, how can you make such a bold conclusion? What is your proof? The proof is of course very simple. Like you consider that your body is constantly changing. Even biologically it is admitted that every moment the old cells in the body are being destroyed and new cells are being produced. And within 7 years, every single cell of the body is actually destroyed and new cells are produced. So although our body is changing, but we do not change. For instance, there was a time when you had a little baby body, when you're 5 years old. Now, that body of course is not there today. The body that you had when you were 5 years old, that body has changed completely, and today you have a totally different body. But still, when you think yourself as when you are 5 years old and you today, it is the same person. It is the same person. You when you are 5 and you when you are 25 or 50 or 75, you are the same person. You think like when I was 5 years old. So this I did not really change. The I is always constant. It doesn't matter whether you're 5 or 50 or 500 or 5,000 years old. The I is unchanging. Now who is this I or what is this I? If we go deep into it, then you realize this I is not actually material. This I is spiritual. And this I is the soul. And as long as the soul is in the body, as long as I am in this body is alive. And the moment the I leaves the body becomes dead. For instance, now that I'm talking to you, you are at least thinking that he is here and he is talking to us. But if I just drop dead now, if I just drop dead, and although my body will be lying here, but you will say that he is gone. Now who is that he who is gone? Like if I was my body, then the body is lying here. So why are you saying that he is gone? So who is that he that is gone? Obviously not the body. So who is he? Unfortunately, you do not know. And it is unfortunately because, unfortunately there is no education about it. Like even to learn alphabets, you made so much endeavor. As a child, remember, when you are trying to learn A, B, C, D, it was such a hassle. Even to learn this alphabet, you put so much endeavor. But go to think of it, to know about yourself, you actually never made any endeavor whatsoever. That is the unfortunate state of affairs in today's world. Like no one is concerned about understanding who he is. Everyone is foolishly thinking that he is his body and always trying to make all kinds of arrangements to keep the body alive. But no matter how much arrangements you try to make, in due course of time, the body dies. You can't keep your body alive in spite of so many endeavors. Although billions and billions of francs are being spent on all kinds of medical researches, but still, you can't make yourself immortal. But actually immortality is possible. Immortality is possible. It is not that you can never become immortal. You can become immortal. But you have to first understand who you are. Then the question of immortality comes. If you think your body is yourself, the body will never become immortal because the body by nature, matter by nature is transient. Matter by nature is temporary. Matter by nature is perishable. Matter is bound to decay. So, this material body will never become immortal. What to talk about making this body immortal? Even for a moment, the body is not constant. Every moment the body is changing. So where is the question of immortality? But you, the spirit, is actually immortal. So if you really want to become immortal, just you realize yourself as the spirit soul. You recognize your real identity, then automatically you will attain immortality. Because by nature you are immortal. But unfortunately, since you are identifying yourself with the body, since you are mistakenly thinking your body to be yourself, that's why you are in such a dilemma. This body is not yourself. Like, in order to clarify that point, let's go back to the scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita, which is the essence of the Vedic wisdom. There, it has been the body and spirit. At the very beginning of that Bhagavad Gita, A discrimination has been made between the body and the spirit. What is body and what is the spirit? And it has been pointed out that this body is transient matter, whereas spirit is non-material spirit soul. The soul is not material, soul is spiritual. But this body is material. So since the body is material, or the body is the product of matter, it is natural that the body will maintain the law of nature, material nature. Now let us consider, what is the law of material nature? The law of material nature is that everything is changing. Everything is temporary, everything is perishable. So maintaining that law of nature, this material body is also perishable, also decaying, and the material nature has a beginning and end. So this body also has a beginning and end. This body begins in the womb of the mother, and then it grows, and then it develops into a grown-up body, and then again it begins to decay, and then finally the body is dead. So everything in the material nature has a beginning, and anything that has a beginning has to have an end. So that is the law of material nature. But defining the spirit, it has been pointed out that the spirit doesn't have either any beginning, nor does it have an end. You can never say that your spirit actually began or born at certain point of time. Like, it is your material body that took the shape in the womb of the mother, not that the spirit was born out of the womb of your mother. The spirit was existing, but it is in the womb of the mother the spirit developed the body, and then ultimately, when the body becomes uninhabitable for the spirit, then the spirit leaves the body. Now, spirits taking up a new body is considered to be birth, and spirits giving up the old body is known as death. So that is, it's a matter of consideration. It is not that we are just trying to impose certain ideas on you, but we are simply trying to give you some lead to think about it for yourself. You all have been endowed with certain amount of intelligence. You all can think. So why don't you think about this subject? Now, defining about the body in Bhagavad Gita, it has been pointed out that this body is like a garment. The way the cloth is the covering of this body, the same way this body is the covering of the spirit. And as long as the spirit is in the body remains alive, and the moment the spirit leaves the body becomes dead. And defining that point, Bhagavad Gita says, Jirnani vashangshi jatha bihayo, navani grinhati naro parani, tatha shorirani bihayo jirnani, annani shangjati navani dehi. Jirnani vashangshi jatha bihayo, navani grinhati naro parani. The way we give up our old garments and put on a new one, the same way when this body becomes old, we give up this old body and take up a new body. And then further defining the spirit soul, it has been pointed out that noinam chindanti shastrani, noinam dahati pavaka, noinam kledayanto apo, noinam shoshati maruta. That the spirit cannot be burnt by fire, it cannot be cut by any weapon, it cannot be moistened by water, and it cannot be dried by air. So that is the identity of the spirit. So when we recognize ourselves as the spirit, and we become situated on the spiritual platform, then our spiritual life begins. And as I was pointing out, that when you talk about simple living and high thinking, the ultimate culmination of simple living and high thinking is actually spiritual life. Now, you see, Vedic science or Vedic wisdom is very definite and very profound. In the Vedic knowledge, in the Vedic wisdom, there is no room for just speculation or assumption. It is a science and it is always intellectually verified. So another approach they made about understanding the spirit is like this. It's a branch of philosophy called Shankha. And Shankha actually means analytical study of the nature. So in this branch of philosophy, they analyze the material nature. And the first they consider that there are five elements in the material nature, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And then they consider we have five senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the skin, and tongue. And these five elements interact with the five senses of our body, and five sense objects are produced. Like the objects of our senses are sound, form, touch, smell, taste. And then they consider there are five working senses, and their hands, the legs, the stomach, anus, and genitals. So these are the five working senses. So 4 fives are 20. Then they consider there are three subtle elements in the nature. They are mind, intelligence, and false ego. So 20 plus 3, 23. And then they finally come to the ultimate elements or ultimate ingredient of material creation known as Mahat-tattva, the basic ingredient from which the whole material creation has been evolved. Even the mind is a product of this Mahat-tattva. The intelligence is a product of this Mahat-tattva. So everything in the material nature is produced out of this basic substance called Mahat-tattva. There is no English equivalent for that expression. So this way, by these 24 considerations, they analyze the whole material creation. But then they consider that all these 24 considerations are objective in nature. They are objective. But the objects cannot exist without the subject. Now what is the subject? The subject is I. That I am here, that's why all these objects are manifest. When I will not be here, then these objects will not become manifest. So the same way, everybody has his eye, and because of that, everybody is experiencing this material nature. Now, if all the eyes are withdrawn from the material nature, will this nature be existing? Hypothetically, no. Because if there is no subject, if there is no person to witness this nature will not exist. This also has been confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says that, defining the material nature, Krishna says that bhumi rapu anolo bayu khang mano buddhi revacha ahankaro itiyang me bhinna prakriti rashtadha. This material nature has been composed of the eight elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And then he says that aparaya mitastannam prakritim viddhi me param, that this material nature is inferior, but beyond this inferior material nature there is a superior nature, prakritim viddhi me param. Param means superior. There is a superior nature, and jiva bhutang mahabaho jajidang dharjate jagat. The living entities are coming from that superior nature, and these living entities are sustaining this material nature. The material nature is sustained by the living entities. So if there is no living entity in the material nature, then the material nature will dissolve. But as long as there is one living entity in the material nature will become manifest or will remain manifest. So that is the understanding. So this material nature is sustained by the living entity. So this I is the subject that is sustaining the material nature. And this I could not be found in anywhere in the material nature. Like the whole material creation has been analyzed by these 24 considerations, but out of these 24 considerations we couldn't find the I. Even up to Mahatattva we went, the basic ingredient of the material creation, but still the I couldn't be found. Hence, I does not belong to the material nature. So where does the I belong to? I belongs to the non-material or anti-material nature, hence spiritual nature. So the I is the soul that is coming from the spiritual nature. So the 25th consideration in the Shankara philosophy is the self or the I, Atma. And with this 25th consideration, they transcend the material platform and come to the spiritual platform. But they don't stop there. Then they further considered that these eyes are minute and many. Like I have my eye and you all have your eyes. Every living entity has his eyes. So there are many eyes, many spirit souls, and they are minute. So anything that is minute and many has to have an origin. Like there are minute drops are falling in the rain. Now there are many minute drops of water. Now obviously they have an origin. And what is the origin? The ocean is the origin of all the water. So the origin of all these spirit souls is the super soul or the supreme soul or God. So this way, the Vedic branch of philosophy define or rather scientifically verify the identity of the spirit soul and its existence as a part of the super soul or God. Now anything that is a part of a whole has to have a connection with the whole. So every living entity has a connection with the Lord. And the moment the part becomes isolated from the whole, then it loses its meaning of existence. Like for instance, a leaf is a part of a tree. A huge big tree and a small insignificant leaf. Still it is a part of the tree. And as a part, the leaf is supposed to render some service to the tree. And as long as it does that, it remains connected to the tree. But the moment the leaf stops to serve the tree, then what happens? The leaf just falls out of the tree. So the same way, we all are the part and parcels of the Lord, but when we stop to serve the Lord, then we become isolated from the Lord and we just fall down. And when we are isolated from our origin, isolated from our spiritual source, then our existence becomes meaningless. And that's exactly what has happened to us. Now we can consider in this platform, in the material platform, practically all of us are oblivious of the Lord. None of us really do care about the Lord. And when you do not care about God, then our life becomes meaningless. No matter how important you are, your life is meaningless. And at the heart of your heart, you know that. But when we become connected to the Lord, then our life becomes meaningful. But how do we become connected to the Lord? We become connected to the Lord by rendering service, as I said. Like the leaf, when it begins to serve the tree again,
it is connected to the tree. The same way we have become isolated from the Lord because we stopped to serve the Lord. But when you begin to serve the Lord again, when you accept the Lord, first of all you have to understand who the Lord is.
By recognizing Him, when you begin to serve Him, then automatically we become connected to Him. And when you do that, then you become situated on the spiritual platform. And when we are situated on the spiritual platform, then we are actually situated in our original identity. Then we do not really make so much endeavor on the material platform. And then the life becomes simple. But our consciousness becomes obsessed with the highest thought, because God is the highest object, and to think about God means to be situated on the highest level of consciousness. So when you think of simple living and high thinking, ultimately it leads us to the point of spiritual life, and on that spiritual life we become able to lead a life of pure and simple life with the highest possible thoughts obsessing our mind, and then only we become really joyful or really happy. You will notice one thing: the more you become involved in the material platform, more miserable you become. At least one thing is clear to everyone, I'm sure, that when you withdraw from the material entanglements, your life becomes simple. Like earlier in the medieval time, the French kings used to leave their palace and go to the villages and live there like farmers. The king used to go with the entourage, with his entourage, and live in the village as a farmer. So we can see that actually everyone aspires to lead a simple life, because everybody knows that simple life is actually the joyful life. So please give it a consideration, actually in such a short time to make a whole big presentation is not possible. All we can do is to give you a lead, but then it's up to you to pursue further. We can just generate a spark of interest in your heart at the most. But then it is up to you to consider. After all, it is not a blind presentation. What we are pursuing, what we are following, or what we are presenting is a reasonable, intellectually verified, and scientifically appreciated process. You will consider that, you will notice that the biggest scientists are actually theists. Sir Isaac Newton was a theist. He used to believe in God. Einstein was a theist. He used to believe in God. They're practically all the big scientists of the world are actually theists. They are believers in God. It's only the unfortunate ones do not believe in God. And by not accepting God, they actually make their life more and more miserable. So spiritual life is not a blind faith. Spiritual life actually is a real science. It is said, when science ends, philosophy begins. But when philosophy ends, religion begins. So the religion or persuasion of spiritual life is actually the highest form of science. So please give it a consideration. We have very many books. We have about 70 different volumes of books. So please read those books and find it out for yourself. And I hope that the relationship that we develop tonight, it will continue in future also. We have our center in Zurich, and we have many members there living in our center. So if anyone is interested, he can come to that center of ours. And if anybody has any question, he can ask now. If any of you have any question pertaining to today's discussion, you can ask. Yes?
I do not understand that you take the body and the mind and the spirit. But why cannot the body enjoy and the spirit be happy? Why you separate? Today mostly they say body, mind and spirit, they're together. It's like there's no separation somehow.
Yeah, because, you see, the body's craving and the spirit's craving are not same in nature. Body's craving, body's demands are material, whereas spirit's demands or spirit's needs are spiritual. So what actually satisfies your body does not necessarily satisfy your spirit. Is that clear?
You say, to serve God, you must know God. Hmm. You must know the Lord. And the question is, who is the Lord?
Yes.
And some Christians, they say, our Lord is Jesus Christ. Hmm. The Buddhists, they say, our Lord is Lord Buddha. Hmm. The Indians, they say, our Lord is Lord Krishna. So who is there in the Lord?
Yeah. You see, God is one and without a second. Right? So, it's not that Christians have one God, Buddhists have another God, Hindus have another God, and so on and so forth. See, God always points out one and only one. All the religions are actually pointing out to that, the one supreme personality. Right? And as far as Jesus is concerned, you see, Jesus said he's the Son of God. Our Father in heaven, love thy Father, the Lord the God, with all thy heart, mind, and soul. So time and time again, Jesus is pointing out to the Lord as the Father. And at least I have never seen any mention in the Bible that Jesus claiming that he is the God. He's always pointing out that he's the Son of God. Yes, but he's not gods. Material nature or spiritual nature.
And
right?
You think when you enjoy your material nature,
like for instance,
cannot make you happy, but only if you go to the spirit.
Same thing about Jesus' words, give unto Caesar that is of Caesar. Right? And give unto God that is of God. So, you see, like, we have to understand that there are two different natures, material nature and spiritual nature. Now, these two natures are diametrically opposite. Right? Matter and spirit are diametrically opposite. Like, matter is unconscious, spirit is conscious. Matter is changeable, spirit is constant. Matter is perishable, spirit is eternal. Right? So they are two diametrically opposite natures. Right? Or in nature they are diametrically opposite. So by the material material involvement, you cannot get the spiritual satisfaction. You see, that's why you notice in the material platform everyone is frustrated. You never become satisfied with whatever you get, right? Say, for instance, today you may think that if you have Rolls Royce, you'll be very happy. But when you get the Rolls Royce, it takes you about a week to get sick and tired of that car, right? Then you want something else, right? So that is the material nature. We are never satisfied with whatever we get. Another example can be given is, you see, you take a fish out of the water and put him in the land. And on the land, give the fish everything, all the comforts of the land. Will the fish be satisfied? No. But take the fish back into water and let him go into the water. Then how the fish will feel? He'll again become joyful. So we actually are spiritual. We all actually came from the spiritual nature. But in the material nature, we are trying to make ourselves happy with all kinds of comfortable arrangements. But those comfortable arrangements does not really make us happy. But like the fish in the water, when you go back to our spiritual nature, then immediately we become joyful. And, yes?
Why do we need a body?
Why do we need a body? Yes, that is unfortunate state of affairs. We don't actually need the body. We don't need, Yes, we got this body because of our material involvement. This body is actually the bondage in this material nature. The way one becomes bound in the prison with a chain, the same way we have become bound in this material nature through this material body. We don't need the body. Actually, the spirit does not need the body. But as long as we have the body, we do not recognize our spiritual identity. We just get caught up with our material body. We begin to think, we become obsessed with the body and think that I am this body. Right? But when you become, but go to think of it, this body is the source of all our suffering. This body, according to the Vedic understanding, has been defined as the source of suffering. The body is a machine. It's a wonderful machine for receiving pain. You know how? We can consider it. Like, take any part of your body. Say, for instance, your leg. Right? And consider in how many different ways you can inflict pain on your leg. You can take a knife, you can cut your leg. You'll get a lot of pain. You can take a piece of, you can take a stone and smash your leg. You get a lot of pain. You can take some fire and burn your leg. You'll get a lot of pain. So this way you can think of so many different ways of inflicting pain on your leg. Yes, fine. I was coming to that. So you can walk and enjoy. Now let us consider, let's make a condition that I will make a huge burning fire and you walk on that fire, right? Or you walk and at the same time with a knife I'll start cutting your leg. Will you agree? No. The pain, the pleasure that you get out of your leg is practically insignificant compared to the pain that you can get through your leg. Like, will you agree with that? Like, if I make a condition, you say, okay, fine, I can walk and I can get a lot of enjoyment. And I can say, okay, fine, you keep on walking, and at the same time, with a hacksaw, I'll start cutting your leg as you walk. Will you agree? You won't. Why? Because the pain that you get by cutting the leg is much greater compared to the pleasure that you get out of walking. Yes, it is. It is. Because we have rejected God. You see, when, like for instance, now in your life, you can ask yourself that how much you are concerned about God. How much? Not very much. Well, I mean, just to, you know, hypothetically. So the thing is that that is everybody, all of us, actually all of us have fallen into the material platform because we have rejected God. That is our crime, and we can go back to God by remembering Him. You see, when we establish our relationship with the Lord, Then you become free from material bondage and you go back to the spiritual nature. The criterion, Yes. Actually, you see, all the religions are, in essence, all the religions are the same. They are giving the same teaching. So if we take the essence, and actually that's what we should take, the essence, not the external rituals, that causes the discriminations. So, you see, like, as I was saying, that this body is the cause of misery, the cause of suffering. But when you become spiritually situated, then you become free from the bondage of body, and we go back to the spiritual nature. Yes, in the spiritual nature you do. Yes, you do, but the best thing to do is to act on behalf of God. Whatever you do, do for the Lord. Right? And that becomes the cause of your liberation. When you act for yourself, then you become bound by the action-reaction chain or karmic chain. But when you act for God, then you become free from the bondage. Yes, you can use the body to render service to God. Yes, you can do that. Yes, it's fine. Good point. You see, the prison house also been created by the state. But the state doesn't want that everybody should go to the prison. Right? Only the criminals are sent to the prison. So this material nature is the prison house of God. Well, you may agree or you may not, but I'm just presenting the facts. Yes, you have some questions. You raised your hand. Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, okay. So you see, let us consider it this way, that what is bondage and what is liberation? You see, just to be in the material nature doesn't necessarily mean bondage, right? Say, for instance, in the prison house, there are prisoners, true, but there are also the prison wardens, the guards and sentries. And now, although they are in the prison, but they are not imprisoned. You see, and what is the criterion? The criterion is they are serving the king, right? In the prison house, those who are working on behalf of the king or the state, right, they are free, right? But the ones, those who defy the law of the Lord or law of the state, they are imprisoned. So the same way in this material nature, the ones, those who are serving the Lord, in spite of being in the material nature, they are free. Whereas the ones, those who are defying the Lord, they are being imprisoned in the material nature. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, the Lord is merciful. And that's why, although He sent us to this prison, but He is providing us with everything that we need. Like, for instance, the king is hypothetically merciful. So He sends the prisoners in the prison Not because the king is sadistic, and he would derive some pleasure by seeing some people suffering in the prison. But the individuals make their own destiny, right? When somebody breaks the law of the state, then because of that crime, he is put into the prison, right? But the king or the head of the state is neutral. He doesn't say that somebody should go to the university and somebody should go to the prison from their birth. But oneself creates his own future, right? So the same way the Lord is all merciful. And it's like, you know, he is the father. So the father is always merciful to the son. And before the son leaves the father says, don't leave, don't go away. But when the son insists, no, I will go, I want to do that. Then sometimes the father says, okay, fine, go. Right? And then the son realizes how difficult it is to leave the father and try to be on his own. So when he realizes fully that it is terrible to be isolated from the father, then he goes back to the father and says, my father, I'm not going to leave you again. Right? So Lord is actually very merciful and he always wants us to go back to him. But we have to make the first endeavor. It is we who left him, so it is we who will have to go back to him. Yes. Yeah, you said it. It's. Yeah, you see, the nature maintains a stringent law, and that law is, as you sow, so shall you reap. Are you familiar with the expression? Yeah, I was. Yeah. So that is, you are just seeing the ultimate outcome, but you are not considering the activities they have been indulging in the past. You see, no one suffers for nothing. So whenever somebody suffers, we have to understand that behind that suffering, there must be a lot of sinful activities. You may term it as anything, but I'm just presenting the... You may term it, call it racism, you may call it whatever you want. But the point is, as you act, accordingly you produce reaction. To every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. That principle holds good in all respects. Right? So when you indulge in bad activities, sinful activities, as a result of those bad activities, you are liable to suffer. And as a result of your good activities, you enjoy. So when there is mass suffering like that, then we have to understand that there has been mass sinful activities. And actually the whole world has become so sinful today. The whole world is so sinful. Isn't it? I mean, today you are saying Cambodia. I mean, don't be surprised if it happens here day after tomorrow. I mean, the world war may break out any day and no country will be spared. And it's all because of their sinful activities. I mean, do you consider that the whole world has become sinful, indulging in all kinds of sinful activities? So isn't there going to be some reaction sometime? Satil Arab. Yeah. Well, it's not that simple. I mean, their life is not that simple. I mean, if you go there, you can see that they are very, very cruel people. From the past, you can consider. I mean, they're very, very sinful. I mean, as a matter of fact, no one suffers unnecessarily. Whenever there is a suffering, we have to understand that there is some cause behind it. In the material nature, nothing happens accidentally. Yes, yes. Right, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point also. You see, when somebody is born in a desert, the understanding is that he must have been very sinful in his past life. You see, only the sinful people are born in desert. Now, say for instance, Switzerland is a nice country, right? Now, when somebody is born in Switzerland, at least we understand, you know, from the karmic theory, that he must have had a lot of pious activities or good activities in his credit in his previous lives. Right? Yes? Yes. Yeah. Right. Right. Yes, yes. The animals have crimes, or you see, the animals, or rather subhuman species of life, are controlled by the material nature. Nature actually takes care of them. Right? So when some animal is slaughtered by human beings, then the humans have to suffer the consequences, right? Yeah, animals are innocent, right? We are making the crime. And actually, and the animals, because of being killed by a man, takes all the good karma of the man who kills him, right? It's actually nature maintains a wonderful karmic balance. And actually, nothing is accidental. Everything maintains a very scientific, very rational balance. And that's why it is said that one should not kill. One should not kill. Not even the animals, not even an insect. Because they are also living, and when they die, they feel pain. Right? And you become liable to the pain also that you are inflicting on others. Also. Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, you can, you see, like, out of utter necessity, you can kill, out of dire necessity, it has been allowed to kill, but still, the reaction-reaction theory holds good. It's not that if you kill a bird in the desert, you do not commit any crime. You do commit a crime. But after all, you have to survive. So at least, you know, like at the expense of committing some crime, at least you maintain yourself. Right? But ultimate consideration is, of course, is that when you serve God, when you dedicate yourself completely to God, then you become free from all action-reaction chain.
What's happening with the souls, for example? They didn't realize that they have the spiritual platform in their mind or whatever in their body. So they die just like this, like simply woman, if the mountain, shepherd or whatever it was. She didn't know just right and nothing. But she was, her life was really clear and pure and humble and everything. So she died without consciousness, or without knowing that she has some other platform in her brain. She was just
As I was saying, that, you see, ultimately everybody has to die, right? Everybody has to leave the body at some point of time, right? So innocence or wisdom are irrelevant in that respect. But when you die in wisdom, then your spirit is elevated further, right? But when you die in ignorance, then your spirit goes downwards, right? And so that's why at least when one gets a human form of life, one must make an endeavor to be situated in absolute wisdom. You see, now you have got the human body. You have got an elevated intelligence, right? Your intelligence is not like that of a cat or a dog. Your intelligence is much more advanced. And you have the ability to expand your intelligence. That is the faculty that the human beings have. That human being has the ability to expand his intelligence. And he can stretch it to an absolute degree. And this, we have been endowed with that intelligence so that we can understand God. So that's why the goal of human life is to understand God. You see, that's why you'll notice that every human society has some concept of God, is following some form of religion or other, right? But a dog or a cat or a tiger or a lion doesn't bother about God. There's spirit in them, but they're, you see, like, it's like this. There's spirit in them, but their consciousness is in a covered state.
Bad karma?
Yes, bad karma. No, by the nature's law, they'll be evolved, and they'll finally get a human body. You see, there is a spiritual evolution. Then ultimately, every living entity will get a human body. And when one gets a human body, then he gets a chance to deliver himself from this bondage. Right? And the way to do it is by understanding God and establishing a relationship with God. Yeah.
I heard somebody saying that when God created animals, he had much more joy to look at them like they were according to the Bible. At the end, he created man, and then he became sad of him. Before, when he only had animals and plants, then he was happy.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
you say the human form of God, the highest form of God, but look around everywhere they born, you cannot live properly,
That is because the modern civilization is turning human beings into animals. Right? But if the human beings were leading a human life, then the human society would have been a wonderful place to live in. Right? Yes. Yeah. So, should I say in English? Yeah. The karmic theory is action-reaction theory. You see, individually we become liable to whatever we do, we become liable to the reaction. But when our great personality like Jesus Christ comes, he can nullify our karma. It's like, you see, in the prison house, the king's representative comes and he says, anybody who follows me will be freed from the prison. Right? So he can do that. He is empowered by the king to nullify their crime. So when Jesus assures us that by following him we can become free from our karma, it is true, he can do that. Persons like him can do that. Is that clear? Thank you. Yes?
We have a lot of problems here in the West. I mean, everywhere except in Asia, we have a problem with the different religions. It's the priest, which in the Bible, or whatever you call it, families, which are sleeping with guiding people. Actually, they go to
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Now, I have the answer to your questions. So if you're really searching for the truth, why don't you follow me? So, you see, the thing is, you see, God does not belong to any particular religion, nor does God belong to any country, right? God actually belongs to everyone. So whoever follows him, he can approach God, right? You see, that is how the whole world is today. You see, all the religions are practically perverted. There is a saying, to quote Will Durant, he says, a religion remains a religion for first few years. Then it becomes a philosophy. Then it becomes a political convenience. And then it becomes a mere ritual. And today, all over the world, practically all the religions have become that mere rituals, right? Not only you, anybody who is searching is faced with that problem. Like, for instance, when I decided to take to spiritual life, I went back to India. And I thought that it would be easy. I would just go to India and I'll find a guru and he will show me the way. And when I went there, I found that I couldn't find a single guru. I couldn't find a single person who I could surrender to with full conviction. And for 1.5 years, I was traveling around searching for a guru. And then when I got completely frustrated, I felt that I don't have a guru. There is no one who can show me the way. Then, very fortunately, I came across a book called The Nectar of Devotion. And when I began to read it, from the very first page, I felt that this is what I was looking for. And while I was reading it, I made up my mind. And that book was written by my spiritual master, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And I have accepted this path, and I know that I made the right decision. Well, I think the onus or the responsibility is more on the pupil. Because, right, say for instance the Harvard University is there, right? And Harvard University is not looking for the students, but the students flock to Harvard University to get admission. Right? So actually it is we who have to, anybody who is sincere about his life, about the goal of his life, must search for a bona fide guru, right? Bona fide teacher. Yeah, and that naturally. You have to be sincere. The process has been described as one must approach a guru with sincere, earnest questions and must follow him to the point, and then only the guru will give the knowledge to the disciple. Don't worry about that. Just be concerned about your karma. Why waste your time in thinking about others? So then you become the real priest or real Pharisee or real Brahmin, whatever. I mean, you be the real one and show them the way. That's the best thing you can do. Instead of being overtly finding faults with others and wasting our time, it's better to just become an example ourselves. So do you. As I said, this time is a very, very complicated time. This age, in the Vedic literatures, it has been defined as the age of cheaters and the cheated. In this age, everyone is trying to cheat everybody else, and in the process, everyone is becoming cheated. So let's at least try to get some sanity and do some good, at least for ourselves, right? Yes.
In your concept, you name three levels. Intellect and spirit.
Yeah.
So where do you place feelings?
Yeah. Feelings is a product of consciousness, right? And basically, it is on the mental and intellectual platform, right? But feelings also can be spiritual, right? And feelings also can be physical. Like I feel a pain in my finger, right? It's feeling. So feeling is a product of consciousness. So wherever there is consciousness, there is feeling, right? So wherever you project your consciousness, there your feeling lies. But the best is to be situated on the spiritual feeling. That is, feel God and feel your relationship with God, right? And then you will feel the real joy. Okay, yes. I think. So Gaurlila, you have to say it in English. Yeah, vielen Dank für deine. The thing is, the impetus for the right feeling is our search for joy. Everybody wants to be joyful. Even we can see that a tree is also searching for joy. Like when you see a tree in darkness, it goes towards light. So whatever we do is for the search of that joy. Now, when we are in the gross bodily platform, then we search for the joy out of matter. But we have seen that is never successful. Trying to enjoy the matter, we never become joyful. So the answer is, the real joy is in our connection with the Lord. When we develop our relationship with the Lord, when we begin to love the Lord, then love, that love for the Lord and the reciprocation of love between us and the Lord becomes the source of our joy. So, the ultimate goal of life is to be surrendered to the Lord. And now, in order to surrender to the Lord, we have to know who the Lord is. Now, that has been defined in the scriptures, and as we practice the process, then we also can understand Him.